Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 5th of December 2012, and I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. Welcome to the show. It's a great pleasure and an honour to be able to bring you this show, and I am able to report that I'm now back in Terra Australis, Terra Nullius, as it is sometimes known, the land that was conquered by the white Anglo-Saxon empire builders. And of course, Terra Nullius was a phrase that was used to describe the fact that no one was here except for those black people running around. Anyway, I'm back, and I'm not here to conquer anything. I'm just here to try and conquer the unknown, conquer ignorance, and shed light on things that are dimly understood and things that have been suppressed in our world. And I'm operating tonight from studios here in Sydney with Damon Crowe, who's my guest for the show tonight. Damon, it's good to be back in Sydney. And how are you, my friend?
Very good, thanks very much. Good to have you back to the enslaved country of Australia.
Yeah, it's a great change. I've been in Thailand for a few months, and the climate here is certainly different emotionally, physically, and everything about Australia is certainly puts it into a very different category to a lot of other places in the world, although it's still got all the same influences and all the same degenerate forces that are pulling the rest of the world down. But there is a sense of kind of where we're in this kind of lulled into this sense of idyllic, subdued acceptance in Australia. Would you? How would you describe it? You were talking about it to me earlier.
Oh, we're one of the most enslaved countries on the planet. I'm sure they hold us up as a potential location to host their head office for the New World Order. Certainly, the construction of Canberra and the amount of space and all the architecture and alignments and symbols and so forth they've used with Canberra sort of indicate that would be the case, that we've been a constructed country from the get-go. We've made out that we're a sovereign country, but I think even if we challenge the Japanese whaling in the Southern Oceans, I believe on an international court we hold very little legal sway, because we're not really even considered a sovereign country. We are a penal colony. and we haven't really changed from that, and the people think that they're free here, but I found Australian people to be one of the more delusional people. We always thought that the Americans were probably the most dumbed down and delusional people on the planet, but I think having really studied what I've studied over the last 3 or 4 years, I think the Australians are right up there.
But there's that kind of relaxed and comfortable vibe. That was the words John Howard used. There is this kind of vibe that everyone's in a good mood and, you know, has a good life. And yet, of course, we're under a lot of pressure. I mean, people work really hard. Mm. They're struggling to survive. They're struggling to pay mortgages. There's a lot of
financial enslavement here is probably higher than just about anywhere. We're literally in the middle of nowhere. We've got oodles of fertile land for growing food. We've got untapped resources and energy. Yet to park a car in the city where everybody, you know, aggregates is right up there with New York. You're looking at about $45 an hour to park your car in the city, at the airport, anywhere like that. Even parking at the side of the street is timed by the councils. And just to buy, a KFC for one is about $10 here or more, or plus more. My daughter and I went out just for a bit of a KFC attack of poison, which you have the urge to do from time to time. It takes you a couple of days to recover. $25 US for the two of us. you know, that's just insane. And of course, the discretion.
That's meant to be cheap food. That's supposed to be cheap fast food.
Yeah, that's the cheapest you can get. If you want the cheap end of the spectrum, you can eat poison at that sort of end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Or you can have something reasonable at about 20, 25 US. So dinner tonight for me was 25 US. Then plus something to drink, that's just the food. That's takeaway. For like a bolognese type thing or something similar, right? So the cost of living in Australia is off the Richter scale. It costs you about $1 million US for any sort of reasonable home.
Yeah.
Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne all have similar sort of price points. And this is a country that has room to spare. There is no lack of anything here, yet we've been created an artificial scarcity of both money and food and everything else you can wish to imagine. Of course, we also get slugged by the banks more than any other country in the world. The banks here in Australia are pulling somewhere around 10 billion US net profit a year, and there's four main ones. So if you add that up plus the other profit, you know, they're pulling huge profits out of Australia when basically the rest of the world is charging 0% interest rates. We're getting slugged at some ridiculous level. And even now, finally, the Reserve Bank of Australia has put the interest rates back to where they were in the 2008 global financial crash. So we are being a good indicator of how enslaved you are is how much profit the banks are making out of you. And the banks in Australia make more money than just about any other country in the world. They're very, very rich, the banks here. It's not to say they wouldn't fall over if there's a crisis, because the whole thing is a scam, of course. But we are fleeced in a biblical level. And the taxing in Australia is phenomenal. The fleecing of people. And it goes back into creating a socialist government. A large percentage, I think it's getting close to 50% of the income that is derived from the federal government goes back to paying a government, a bureaucrat, to basically do nothing. So if you had the banking sector, the legal sector, and the government sector, none of which contribute in any way to the productivity of the country, they're fleecing the country in a huge way, and there's really only a small percentage of the people that are actually working, and they are just driven to total enslavement.
Yeah, and they have to support the you mean the productive people who are actually doing
stuff.
Have
real stuff. Jobs. Yeah,
which is actually probably vastly outnumbered by the people who just do meaningless bureaucratic jobs, either for the government or for large corporations.
Yeah, I had a mate of mine join the council just recently, and I asked him what he'd been doing for the last few weeks, and he said, I haven't been doing anything at all. And I said, no, really, what have you been doing? He said, no, I haven't actually been doing anything at all. And I said, well, we surely must be doing something. He said, and he goes, well, the guys have been taking me around. First of all, they indicated to him that they don't want him to work very hard because it won't be tolerated. So he got told in no uncertain terms that he's not allowed to work hard because that will make everybody else look poor. But one of the fascinating things he got covered in his kind of induction period, one of the other guys showing him around, his guy's a, you know, he's a uni qualified horticulturalist, so he's doing sort of, you know, greenkeeping type stuff for the council, and he was shown places where he could hang out for 3 or 4 hours and snooze, places to hide.
This is what happens when you've got a very corrupt system that is managed by parasitical forces that create a false economy. But see, a lot of people would think that sounds great. I mean, you know, you don't have to do much work. It's all a gravy train. And yet there is something really dehumanizing, well, maybe that's not quite the right word, but there is something that destroys your morale.
Yeah.
And I've experienced
it.
I've experienced it in jobs where I haven't been given enough to do, but you still have to give the appearance that you're doing something, and you do have to be there. But because you're not really engaged, you become exhausted, and the boredom actually saps your something important in your soul, in your spirit, basically starts to become lose its intensity in you when you're forced to be like a pretend job. When you're forced to do something that's not real, that doesn't engage you, that doesn't really challenge you, I think it really has a very very bad effect on your health and on your psyche.
Yeah, there's nowhere in the world where socialism or communism type structures of working for the state actually succeed, because somehow it attacks the very nature of people to be themselves, and there's never, I can't really see anywhere there's really been a free market. It seems to be small periods, say the 50s and the 60s and 70s, maybe in the US in particular, there was periods of sort of capitalism, but clearly the people who run the world choose communism, socialism as the a social structure, political structure of choice, because it enslaves the people. And Australia really is moving towards that style of government. And people think that we'll be taken over by the Chinese, but we really are already essentially there. China's coming in here and taking up huge hunks of land, and we're talking about tens and tens of thousands of hectares of land we're just handing across to them. And the people of Australia, who should be probably one of the most prosperous countries in the world, are working to the ages of 75. They generally get mowed down by some sort of illness at that point in time. The healthcare here is pretty second rate. The transportation system here is second rate. You've got to work exceptionally hard to get ahead in this country, and it's turning out to be nearly an impossible task, I think. The average price of a house is $1 million. By the time you've paid that back, it's probably $3 or $4 million. Good wage in Australia would be $100,000 plus a year. By the time the government takes half of that out and there's income tax, by the time you pay off the your loan and all the rest of it, it's really impossible to get ahead.
So if you're just as an example, if you're earning a decent income, let's say you're earning over $100,000, and you're trying to buy a decent property here for a family, you're going to be in your repayments to the bank, unless you have money already and you're able to reduce your increase your equity.
Yeah.
But let's say you're a typical buyer, I think your repayments that you're going to be making are going to be well more than half of what you earn, aren't they?
Yeah. And what's happened over the last 30 years, because when I grew up in the 70s, as a young boy, say, in Queensland, my dad worked, and he didn't really work that hard, in my opinion. He was a pretty slack sort of job that I could see as a sales sort of guy. Mum didn't have to work. Most families are the same. We had two cars. We had colour TV. It was never a rush. We had plenty of time to play football, go to the beach, relax. I just remember those days, and I'm sure anybody who lived through the 50s, the 60s and the 70s felt that it was just a beautiful period to be living. We were very carefree, and I think that was the cost. We were kind of ignorant and carefree and drinking beer and going to the football, and we just didn't really know about anything. And by the time they incrementally changed things in the 80s, 90s and now in the noughties, if you like, there's very little left.
Absolutely. And we'll continue with that after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today, and I'm talking to Damon Crow, and we'll be getting into some really interesting research that Damon's been doing directly after the break. Please stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like the river I
gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And my guest today is Damon Crowe, who is been a sponsor of this show. And Damon is also a sponsor of Aussie Beach TV. And I just want to alert our listeners to the fact that Damon is going to be featured on Aussie Beach TV this week in Bondi Beach. Now, of course, Aussie Beach TV is an amazing little homegrown enterprise out of the Gold Coast in Queensland. And I've had the creator of that program on my show, and I've been watching some of their shows, and they really get into a lot of topics that are quite interesting and quite important. Damon, you'll be down at Bondi Beach this Sunday. What are you going to be talking about on Bondi Beach?
I have no idea. Marcus had a chat to me last week, but obviously we spent some time on Saturday thinking about it, but I'm generally out there. That's my caper, so I'm going to, I don't want
to myself, I'm going to talk about everything and anything, but I want to get to the bottom of how we got here and who's really running the show. And as I was talking to you today, William Dean Garner has come up with a book, Who Really Owns Your Gold? And the interesting thing about this that we were talking about just about this guy before you left to go to Thailand.
Yes.
And he's a very interesting guy. He's ghostwritten a number of New York bestsellers, and he's also the editor of the Dan Brown Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. He's pretty successful. He's 55-ish, I think. He's now living in sort of a gated community in South Africa. He's left America because he thinks it's going to absolutely collapse. But the book, as the name suggests, Who Really Owns Your Gold, is about if you are in the game that we've been in and trying to discover who's really running the show, and you use the simplistic method of just following where the money is, then you invariably end up with going to Israel and the Zionists and the Rothschilds, and then you then getting led to the Vatican, and then you actually get led to the Jesuits. And he believes, and as I do, the Jesuits run the complete show, and probably will have done for the last 500 years. And they have a public face out there, like obviously the Black Pope is the head general of the Jesuits, but he's more of a public face. And then he has generals underneath him of various descriptions, but they control everything basically, and certainly control the monetary system. But they pretty, I think there's 165 global banks that they control through their various control mechanisms.
So you've been doing a lot of study in this topic, and I mean, I'd like to really get into this in today's show, so I want to kind of step us through. First of all, can you tell me anything more about the author that you referred to there, William Garner? What is his background?
He had a military background, actually. He joined the military in his late 30s and competed with a bunch of mid-30s and joined up with, you know, sort of 18, 19-year-old guys and did all that sort of stuff. I'm not totally sure why. It was a bit sort of weird. But he was actually an engineer and scientist by background. He's not too dissimilar to me. He has a very engineering, scientific sort of mode to his thinking. So he's a very analytical sort of guy and breaks things down. He's done thousands of hours of research into this topic. But he actually started with Brzezinski. He met
Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Yeah, right. That was his trigger point. And and that sort of had him going and thinking and researching for 20 or 30 odd years. But he was very similar to me, where he kind of woke up to a new level about 4 years ago and really researched, who was really controlling the people of the planet. And that led him to the Jesuits. But he also spent a long time as a ghostwriter and an editor. So he's no dummy. He's very well schooled. He's got an engineering – he's a scientist, I think, by background. So he's very analytical. If he doesn't know something, he's quite openly admits that he doesn't know. But he, on the things that he does know, he's quite forthright in telling you how things actually work. And he believes that you're never going to get anybody to come out and tell you exactly how the world works unless you get a real whistleblower, and they're few and far between. And a real whistleblower telling you the real truth would be deader than a hammer in fairly short time. And so you've really got to use a problem-solving technique of collecting circumstantial evidence and connecting the dots and creating a picture using overwhelming information. And he's used something like 1,000 books on the Jesuits. There's a lot of stuff written about them, but nothing really in the public domain, and not many people talk about them. Right. A lot of people talk about the global banking cartel, say, for instance, like Alex Jones does, but they'll never get into the Jesuits. Very few people even mention about the Zionists because fear of retribution, yeah. Talking about those guys. And of course, the Rothschilds and the Zionists have been the banking guys with these guys for quite a few hundred years, and that's a known fact. But I feel that they're quite expendable. I think there's lots of people in the structure that are quite expendable, and the people who really run the show are the dark forces behind the scenes. And the first time we got wind of that was when JFK, whose handler was a Jesuit, He somehow, you know, that famous speech where he came out with this monolithic secret society that had all this incredible amount of resources, military resources, and that famous speech that you hear on, you know, in the conspiracy circles all the time. He got nailed, obviously, because of that. And obviously he was nailed by the lower, you know, that command got sent down the chain and he was knocked off by a local mafia or whatever. But that was a Jesuit maneuver, as was the killing of Lincoln.
Yeah.
So all presidents since Lincoln, according to him, have all been Jesuit controlled.
So the Jesuits have a hand in many pies. They have. Yeah. Now, how do they control the financial world?
Can
you step us through that?
Well, all the fractional reserve. The fractional reserve banking system was a creation of theirs. The Rothschild Empire and their various minions obviously control that. They created the Federal Reserve Bank. The International Monetary Fund is theirs. The Swiss banking empire is theirs. And the banking side of things is probably reasonably easy to track, because you always end up back with the Rothschilds when you go and track those guys and you find out what that's going on. But it's essentially a privately run affair, even though the face of it appears like it's public. Like if you go to the Federal Reserve Bank, it kind of gives all the impression on face value that it's an above board public, you know,
the name controlled. Is very deceptive, isn't it? Of course, we've got the Reserve Bank of Australia.
Yeah,
which I assume is similarly structured. We tend to think it is owned by the people, but
we've got no control over it whatsoever. In fact, if you look at the people who are on the Reserve Bank, you've got people like the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, and what the hell they've got to do with the people of Australia and the citizens of Australia, I've no idea. Coca-Cola, Amatil. I mean, you have to really look. James Hardy, we've got dumbs for asbestos crimes in Australia, killing people using that. The banking system makes no sense at all. It's this fragile, completely Ponzi scheme system that actually makes no sense at all. The interesting thing is that he said that in South Africa, or in Africa in general, there's over 1 million metric tons of gold and diamonds. And if you go around, there's no... there's no lack of wealth in this world, yet we're on the precipice of complete bankruptcy. And he got to the point where I got to, where you're looking at, well, what's the agenda here? Well, the agenda here is to have the haves and the have-nots. It's going to be very much like Hunger Games. That's a very accurate depiction as what's going to happen in the next 50 years. They're going to wipe out the middle class, and the middle class here in Australia has been squeezed considerably in the last 30 years, and they generally do this incrementally, so you don't feel it. It's like, you know, boiling up the frog and slowly, and the frog doesn't really jump out of the water. It just ends up being, you know, boiled to death, and that's what they're doing.
You know, there's been some experiments done to test that theory about frogs, and it turns out frogs are not as stupid as we thought. Actually, frogs do jump out of the water when it starts to get hot. Human beings don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, you with Truth News Radio. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us.
punchline, left a punchline, leaving us all.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Please check out our website at truthnews.com.au. Become a subscriber and have a look at our Facebook page and join the discussion. We really look forward to your comments and thoughts. And I do get a lot of emails and a lot of insightful messages from people. And I do apologize if I don't always reply. I'm pretty busy with everything that I do, and I don't have a chance to get back to everyone who does send me stuff, but I do read everything that I get. Now, I'm just talking to Damon Crowe here about the research here that he's done, the book by William Garner that explains interconnections between the Jesuits, the monetary system, and gold. And I just want to get back to this question of, like, when people make claims about, oh, you know, the Jesuits are running the world. And I see some people have a reaction to that. And I think rightly they say, well, how do you know? What's your proof? What's your evidence? It's a conspiratorial assertion, which sounds a bit ridiculous. But I think quite often it's the way the information is conveyed, especially sometimes by people who don't fully understand it when they're repeating things, that then comes across in a way that is less convincing than it would be if you actually got all the facts and really looked at them. And I just want to run an example past you, Damon, as to how it might be that the Jesuits have this type of power. Now, we know that the Jesuit orders run many schools. So, and many of leading politicians have been schooled through Jesuit schooling systems. Now, I'm guessing here that the thesis of this man, William Garner, relies on that type of structure. So when he's saying that the Jesuits control things, he's talking about a very low-level type of thing where the Jesuits, because they do have these prestigious institutions that groom and educate children of the wealthy elites, that is partly how they get into being able to control on the level that he says they do. But I think it's would be good to try and explain that to our audience more, so that when assertions are made that, oh, this is just a conspiracy theory, we can actually say, well, no, here is actually how it works, and here are the facts. What's your take on that?
Well, there's no way in this interview we're going to even scratch anything more than a superficial layer of what's going on. And because it takes one of the interesting things is he came to exactly the same location that I got to after roughly about the same amount of time, about 2 or 3, 4 hours a day for 3 or 4 years of research. And he said that, if you really want to know the answer to the question you're posing, you have to be prepared to do 100 hours research using suitable information. And there's over 1,000 books, and he's tried to condense them down through a few different books that quote those resources. And I think the same, if you want to go and study, say, 9/11 or World War One or World War Two or going to the moon or whatever, you have to be prepared to do the hard yards. And I don't find many people are actually prepared to do that. They haven't got the time to go and do that. But if you really wanted to know the answer of it, it's no way known am I going to give it justice in, 10 or 15 minutes or half an hour or anything like that. And I quite often get ask questions, around a barbecue or at a party or a social gathering.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can do is spark enough interest that you go and do your own independent research. I'm not suggesting anybody take at face value what I'm saying. I'm just saying that this guy got to where I got to coincidentally, and it was kind of reinforcing for me that someone else had pretty well the same taking on it. And he's had a very good analytical process of isolation, which I do as well, because I work in a very highly complex technical game, and I don't really profess to be an engineer. I feel I'm more right brain sales and marketing, but I've spent the last 6 years resolving all the most complex technical issues because I am very good at problem solving. And the conspiracy stuff, you have to be a very good problem solver. You have to be open-minded.
Indeed.
And you have to be prepared to do arduous amount of work. You've got to plow through hundreds of hours of stuff, whether it's videos or books or combinations thereof or interviews or research, whatever mechanism you use for gathering the information. You have to do the hard yards, and I'm just saying that that's where I got to, that's where he got to. Do your research. I think you'll find that's where you'll get to as well. But if most people have got a huge opinion and have no idea, what I find is that people like William Garner and myself, I'll only comment on the stuff that I know. I'm not afraid to tell you I know nothing about a particular subject, and I just won't comment on it. You were talking about chem spraying. I believe that there is something going on the chem spraying stuff, but it's not something I've dedicated hard research to, so I opt out of it for a comment if someone else has got a real solid opinion on it. But if you ask me what I thought about 9/11, or you ask me who's running the world, or you ask me what I thought about the Vatican, or if you ask me whether we went to the moon or not, I'll tell you quite definitively where I got to, and that's using, you know, that takes a lot of research, and I would like to see other people start doing that. You think about the amount of time people waste reading ridiculous newspapers and watching TV and the crap that we go on with, and the superficial lives most of us live. I mean, no one's thinking anymore. I believe there's only a very small percentage of the population are true independent thinkers. And to be a true independent thinker, you need to have an open mind. Sure, you can have a skeptical mind, but most people have got an artificially programmed ego that's been installed at an early age. And as a result, they haven't even figured themselves out. So what are the chances they're going to figure out what's happening in society? I mean, they lie to themselves at a habitual level. They can't deal with reality on a personal level. They have a false construct of who they really are on a personal status. They have little or no chance of figuring out how the world works. I mean, I went down to Melbourne recently and ran into my mum's husband, and he started defending the royal family. And I asked him, what did he base that on? And he said that no one had ever assassinated the royal family. So that's got to be a very good defense, that they must be good people. And I really looked at him in total amazement, because we're in, you know, England, Australia, and generally the British Empire is one of the dumbest collection of people you've ever wish to see on the planet. The fact that these people are doing nothing to resolve any of the real pressing problems we have as humanity in terms of starvation, food, injustices in the world and all the rest of it, and here they are sitting on trillions of dollars worth of assets doing absolutely nothing. I said, have you ever seen an interview that reveals the true feelings of the Queen on real key deep subjects, on humanity, war, religion? He said no. And I said, well, how the hell could you possibly have such a strong a view about the royal family and how brilliant they are when you know nothing about them?
Of course, Princess Diana did express a lot of personal feelings.
Of course, she told you she was going to get killed. I mean, this royal family, if you go and start, researching Louis Mountbatten, right, and find out who he was, and this guy was a fruitcake, and then realise that he introduced Jimmy Savile to the family, right, who's now been done for pedophilia, but these guys are into necrophilia as well, right?
Okay,
and Jimmy Savile, he was
he was a BBC presenter,
did child shows,
who
and
died
so forth.
A couple of years ago. Mm. But now it's been exposed that he was
This is a huge story.
A pretty
whether
bad
it actually
guy.
Goes anywhere, I suggest it doesn't, because it goes straight to where you think it goes to. I mean, Charles used to write this guy letters for Christmas. They used to spend Christmas together. Margaret Thatcher had about a half a dozen or more consecutive Christmas days with this bloke. Right, this guy is a complete fruitcake and a demonic person. I mean, this guy's into necrophilia. And he was introduced to the royal family through no other than Louis Mountbatten. Now, if you have a look at his relationship with Prince Philip and Prince Philip's you know, sisters have all married ex-Nazis and all this sort of stuff. I mean, the view people have of the world is so insane. Most people are, by every definition, are psychotic, to be perfectly honest. And the ability for these people to wake themselves up and deal with topics like, you know, the Jesuits are ruling the world. Like, I know there's a bunch of twits sitting at home right now that are laughing at this, but would they get off their ass and do the research? Probably not. Even if they did the research, could they comprehend it? Probably not. I mean, most of these people can't comprehend. They don't really have a true understanding of themselves. They're usually delusional about themselves. So, you know, they lie to themselves habitually. So what are the chances that they're going to be open-minded enough and have enough critical independent thought to be able to resolve what's going on with the world? There's only a few of us that have really got that sort of capacity, unfortunately. I'm finding more and more people are starting to wake up. There's clearly some cosmic alignments in the cosmos, and by the way, he talks about, you know, the Jesuits then go off world after that, and this whole thing is ruled by you know, alignments of the planets and astrology, and that's all been lost as well. We've got junk astrology now. We don't really study the science of astrology anymore.
We're just heading to break. I understand the Jesuit topic there is something we're going to have to study to understand it more deeply. I do look forward to getting William Gunn on the show, and we're going to try and organise that. We'll be right back after the break, and we're going to continue on the same vein. We're going to start talking about gold. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Damon Crowe tonight. And we've been talking about the Jesuitical conspiracy that runs the world. And Damon's been referring to the work of William Garner. And there's a connection here between the Jesuits and the financial system and gold. If we could now turn to the subject of gold, Damon, and just lay it on me. What do you know? What have you got?
Well, we have had a fascination with gold from any recorded history of humans on the planet. Even though we're meant to have evolved for 4 million years, we can only remember vaguely 2,000 years, and anything further than that's considered ancient history, although it's recent history when you look at it. But if you can go back to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years, we have always been besotted with gold
for one reason or another. And it became disconnected from the currency system about 100-odd years ago, and we've been running with the fiat paper system since. However, gold and to a lesser extent silver is still really considered the true monetary system. And as the current financial system collapses, which invariably it's going to do, and I think unfortunately for America, I believe as William does, it's going to be completely destroyed because they can no longer have a true middle class, and they certainly can't have an armed middle class. So any sovereign armed society and strong middle class society will be wiped out, and they are going to do that. My view is I think they'll do it in 2013. He actually believes it was going to be 2012, but later, looking at the way things panned out this year, he kind of reached where I got to about halfway through the year that it wasn't going to happen this year, that I believe it was going to be 2013, but he says 2013 to 2014. There's tons of gold floating around the place. There's apparently 100 million metric tons of gold and diamonds in Africa, according to William. And underneath Johannesburg, you're looking at a hunk of gold that's the size of Los Angeles and goes down a mile deep. So I think the world is full of diamonds and gold. And places like Australia, we can pull it out at a reasonable sort of rate per metric ton and all that sort of jazz. I think it's 1,200 tons a year get pulled out of the ground. I think we pulled 200 ton out or something like that. We're second, I think, on the list of countries that can pull that stuff out of the ground. But he's talking about 100 million tons of it. So when you pull that stuff out of the ground, it must be sitting somewhere, right?
Yep.
But one of the things he points out is a lot of the gold that's out there at the moment is fiat gold, and the real gold somewhere else. Now, he says it's in – one of the things I want to go and talk to him about is find out, well, where the bloody hell is it?
What is fiat gold? I don't understand that.
Well, they're not real gold bars. They're tungsten things covered in gold. Oh, and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. They've got serial numbers on them that don't add up and all this sort of shit. It's very, very interesting.
This problem with tungsten.
If I was buying gold, I don't think there's no point in bothering buying gold unless you physically had it.
Yeah.
Like if you're buying gold and shares and so forth and in the bank, because when this whole thing collapses, like for instance, when I go and say, want to transfer money from my account to your account, right, it goes in, it does, even though it's happening electronically, right, at light speed,
yes,
it won't get to your account for 3 days.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this happens with trillions of dollars of money floating around the system, right? When the system collapses, like it was going in 2008, if they didn't do that emergency bailout, right, there was a fear that the whole thing would collapse. Now, if it collapses, you won't be able to – so it takes me 3 days to get my money to your account, even if we're in the same bank, running the same electronic system. Can you imagine when the system collapses? You may not get anything back, anything ever again, right? That's what I fear is going to happen. There's going to be a shutdown. You're not going to be able to access money. Pandemonium is going to break out. And although one of the things he said was they try to avoid real cataclysmic type stuff like that because the people will start looking for blood and try tracking people down.
I think there's a behavioristic principle there. Threats are more effective than their execution. But a little taste of the threat is enough to scare people, but you don't want to go too far because then you either create the reaction, the backlash, or you paralyze people completely. And we don't want people paralyzed. You don't want them backlashing. You want them to keep working. You want them to keep basically being your slaves, right?
Yeah.
But a little bit of fear is good.
It's absolutely imperative. They've got to have you in constant state of fear.
Yeah.
Fear for how you're going to pay your mortgage off, fear for how you're going to make the next week's payments, fear
So the 2008 thing was really a scare more than anything else. It didn't affect us directly much in Australia at all.
No.
It had more of an effect in the US, of course, but it still was, you know, it was a scare and it made people tighten their belts, work harder, and of course then we had austerity measures.
The three levels of quantitative easing, you know, injections of chemotherapy, and they're going to be going for another one, and that just can't keep on going, right? So it's going to go bang, and the balloon of debt has kind of got to the stage. It's literally the disclosed debt is huge. The undisclosed debt of the toxic derivatives and share swaps and all the rest of it is something like $700 trillion or something insane. So the whole thing's going to go bang. It's just a question of how it goes bang, who it takes down, when things fall out. And you know, I don't think anybody's going to be able to find where the gold is. I mean, I think I was telling you before, the researcher from New Zealand who eludes me now, a very interesting guy, has had a couple of takes on his, you know, attempts to take his life in New Zealand. Who wrote the book that Hitler was a British agent, and of course he was connected to the Jesuits as well, which is well documented. He said that the Japanese and potentially the US took 1,200 trillion dollars of gold out of China in World War II, and nobody even really knows what that is. Now, I suspect there is an insane amount of gold floating around somewhere, and it isn't where you think it is.
Yeah. Well, there is a problem here with gold in the sense that, for believing in it as a really safe thing to invest in, I am skeptical. Although I do think that gold intrinsically does have value, and I don't dispute that. But the value is based on scarcity.
Yeah.
So if, as you say, there is a massive amount of gold that hasn't been tapped, well, the price of gold could plummet if that gold was brought up out of the ground. And another thing that can happen, because gold is it is an element. And technology and nanotechnology has been advancing for decades. sooner or later, we will know how to make gold. I don't think that's beyond expectation, beyond the capacity of what science and technology can do. It's simply a transformation of a physical material. Mm. And there will come a time, I believe, where gold can be manufactured.
Philosophers and alchemists have always spoken about turning lead into gold and all this sort of stuff.
Now, I mean, to some extent, I'm a little surprised that we haven't figured out how to do it yet.
Oh, because the technology and knowledge that's in the public domain is half of 1% of what's really going on.
Okay.
I mean, you only have to read up on Nikola Tesla and Walter Russell to find out what's really going on. I mean, these guys had free energy coming out of their wazoo. I mean, some of the stuff that Nikola Tesla was working on before, you know, they burnt down his entire laboratory and he died a pauper under the hands of JP Morgan. You know, anybody who seriously wants to find out what's going on, you better include Nikola Tesla and Walter Russell as part of your study of finding out what's going on, because you'll find they've been suppressing free energy. Of course, zero-point energy, free energy, or the ability to produce energy as an individual, you know, something the size of a suitcase to power up a 10-story building, right, just out of sucking energy straight out of the ether.
Yeah.
If you really knew that, the world would be completely different, because we could have create our own energy. That means you could literally do what – you could create your own – pump water out of the ground, create what you'd have enough energy. You'd have enough energy to suck water straight out of the air, right? Because that's a fairly energy intensive thing. But if you had that amount of energy, you could just create your own water.
Yes.
Of course, they want to control water. You could certainly create your own food from that. You could be very, very self sufficient on an individual basis. You'd get rid of all this ridiculous notion of driving around cars on bloody petrol, paying the outrageous amount of money we're paying for that ridiculous dark substance.
Well that's effectively a tax, isn't it? I mean, the price of petrol, the price of oil is a tax.
Well, once you study all this, you realize that it is just incremental handbrake levers have been applied deliberately to the human race to slow us down intentionally. I mean, if you look at any country and have a look at how much money they're spending on the bureaucracy and how much money the banks are making, if you took that equation out, like for instance, we're talking about $50 billion worth of profit on a $1 trillion economy in Australia, that's 5% of the entire GDP. Well, if you add up what the legal organisation, the cost of the government is, and you'll find out that you know, half of the whole gross domestic product of the country is being spent on nothing, on nothing. We don't need it at all. So could you imagine having a small government, minimalistic/no banking empire, because you're just electronically moving around a fiat currency that's a complete Ponzi scheme in the first place, and you had something like zero-point energy, something where energy was for free, can you imagine the prosperity that would be on the planet? And you pulled out all this ridiculous mind-control religion, we would be living in Nevada. I mean, this world is a pure heaven, but it is a hell in terms of the people that are on it and the systems of governing and controlling us, from the legal system to the illusionary financial system to the illusionary education system to the illusionary religion. Your spiritual system. I mean, the whole thing is a lie.
Brilliant summary there. And of course, you know, it's all about the concentration of power. It's about it's sort of an archaic form of society where we are all the subjects of some kind of power or force which holds us in its thrall.
We're getting to a very dark point in human history right now, that the worst is yet to come. The next couple of years is going to be some of the worst stuff we've ever seen, in my opinion, and people better start figuring it out.
Thanks, Damon. Look, it's been great having you on today. And as I said before, you'll be on Aussie Beach TV next week, and we'll post that on Truth News. Unfortunately, we won't have Hour 2 for you today. I've had a very busy schedule, so Hour 2 will be a rebroadcast this week. But do stay tuned and come back next week. We'll see you then.